Here we are with one of my favorites that we have on the Congressional Corner, one of the brightest lights of all political scientists, if not the brightest light, Russ K. Baker, Distinguished Professor of Political Science at Rutgers University, PhD from the University of Pennsylvania, Research Associate at the Brookings Institution, and a guy who has served with a lot of important people like Harry Reid, former minority and majority leader of the United States Senate, the head guy, in other words. Okay, so Ross, I want to talk to you a little bit about one of my favorite subjects, which I am often criticized for. What was going on with Kirsten Gillibrand? What was she doing up there? Do you have any sense of that?
Oh, yeah, you've hit on a topic that I've thought a lot about. I was in Reid's office, Harry Reid's office, when she was appointed to the Senate by Governor Patterson. Harry Reid took an immediate liking to her. He thought she was very good. I think that they formed a very good relationship, and it's always good to be on the right side of your party leader. I think the Al Franken episode just soured a lot of people on her. That and the fact that she made the transition from that fairly conservative Hudson Valley district in New York, in which she got a high rating from the National Rifle Association, to representing the entire state of New York as a much more liberal U.S. senator. And, you know, that's understandable. I mean, you know, the constituency she had as a House member just doesn't translate well to the entire state of New York. You know, it's an atypical district. It's a more typical upstate district.
Right.
But she realized that there are a whole lot of votes in the five boroughs and in the inner boroughs of Long Island and in the communities of Long Island. And I think she had to make a transition. But she didn't seem to make the transition in a kind of graceful kind of segue. She kind of abruptly became a liberal, and it sort of kind of tagged her as being inauthentic.
That's a polite word for it.
Yeah, you know, and then there was the Franken episode, and she sort of kind of, you know, led the Tar and Feathers gang.
Yeah.
Franken basically pleaded with people, look, let this run through the ethics committee. I mean, I'm willing to be reprimanded. I'm willing to be rebuked. I'm willing to be censured. You know, let my colleagues pass on what I've done in my past career as a comedian, and whether this disqualifies me from being in the Senate. And Gillibrand, you know, I think basically was, you know, heating up the tar and getting the bags of feathers ready to, you know, to apply them to Franken and then to get him kicked out of the Senate. And I think that what happened was that a lot of people felt that that what she had done was to basically hastily throw a candidate, a fellow Democrat, and a liberal over the side, and has never been forgiven. There are contributors, especially, who feel that Franken was hard done by, and Gillibrand was the instigator.
Isn't there a possibility that she thought by doing that she would become the ideal person because she would be the feminist Me Too leader? And I don't think that happened.
Well,
happens.
I mean, the moment was right. I mean, it was clear that at that point the Weinstein scandal was unfolding, and clearly, you know, she was tapping into that, and it certainly did ingratiate herself, I suspect, with a lot of members of the Me Too movement. But I think more broadly, I think it was an effort that really contained the seeds of the destruction of her presidential campaign.
Let me talk to you a little bit about redistricting. You're an expert in that and the gerrymander. And Pennsylvania has recently done some favors for the Democrats, I think. What is your sense of the Supreme Court saying, no, we're not going to mess with gerrymander. Let people gerrymander away. And yet, it is so anti-democratic in every part of its nature.
Well, here's a real irony. You know, the Democrats have never been big fans of federalism. The Democrats kind of loved the national government, loved Washington, right. You know, thought the states were, you know, at best kind of lukewarm on social issues and civil rights issues and so on. And under Donald Trump, everything has changed. The states have sort of resumed their exalted positions as the laboratories of democracy. The Supreme Court adamantly refuses to deal with gerrymandering. They consider this a so-called political question that they won't touch with a barge pole. But the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania, the Supreme Court of North Carolina have said, yeah, you know, look at our state, look at where the votes are, look how disproportionately the Republicans have endowed themselves with seats that they don't deserve. We need to allow that map to be redrawn. Now, what this means, of course, is a prolonged process. That what the Supreme Court could have done with one decision will have to be replicated now by 48 other states.
In other words, the state courts have to do this. The Supreme Court said, we're staying, as Frankfurter once said, we're staying out of the political thicket.
Well, either the state legislatures have to do it, or state Supreme Courts, as in Pennsylvania and North Carolina, should be the ones to say, okay, this is something that needs to be done, and green light the state legislatures to go ahead with the process of redistricting.